Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite TV after show begins, we want to let you know about my new show on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. It's called Conversations with Maria, and it's live Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to conversationswithmaria.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
That's right. Yeah, you're here. You got what you wanted. You get what you wanted.
Sounds like you're cutting a wrestling promo.
I'm so pumped up. I feel like we're kind of hyped up, right?
Yeah,
we've wanted an episode like this for so long. I mean, this was like everything we were hoping the entire middle of the first half of the season was going to be, in my opinion anyway. Guys, if you didn't know, this is the AfterBuzz TV after show for The Walking Dead. Season 6, Episode 9, No Way Out. On AfterBuzz TV, I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined by my lovely panel of co-hosts, Mr. John Carl.
Hey, guys, at the John Carl on Twitter, and, of course, Whiskey and Waffles on YouTube.
We have a brand new guest.
How's it going, guys?
We have Ace.
Yep.
Ace Cabrera.
Ace Cabrera.
You can find me on Twitter at Squad Leader Ace.
Squad Leader Ace. I love the reference.
Yeah.
And Daryl Kristen.
What's up, everybody? Glad to be back. You can find me at Daryl Kristen on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and also Black Hollywood Live.
Absolutely. And if you wanted to find me, I'm Ben Bateman Media. Let's talk about the episode. But before we do, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, we're everywhere. Guys, help us out by giving us comments. Follow us on Twitter. Leave your thoughts, all that. Use the hashtag ABTVTWD to let us know your thoughts on tonight's episode. Let's get straight into it, guys. Number one, we start off on the road. We pick up with the promo from last season where we have Daryl and our gang in the oil tanker, and they've been confronted by, we now know, Negan's people.
Yep.
Or the people that were Negan's people.
Right, exactly.
We saw a bazooka, guys. Like, there was a bazooka on The Walking Dead get fired.
So I was so happy about that, because it's like, okay, they're going to get bitched out. Maybe somebody's going to get shot. And I'm thinking to myself in the back of my head, God, it'd be great if Daryl just, or not Daryl, although it would be great.
Would you like me to be shot in an episode of Walking Dead?
No, I was going to say you came out with a rocket launcher. But if Daryl came out and surprised him with a rocket launcher, I'm like, they're not going to do that. That's way too big a moment. And they did it, and it was awesome. I was so happy about that.
Just annihilated the whole crew. Yep. Everybody. Insane.
Yeah. I love the shot of the burning skull right afterwards, too.
Oh, it's great.
For a guy who's probably never shot a rocket launcher, too, good shot on him. Because he took out everybody.
It's Daryl, man. Daryl has proven to be, him and Rick are the two biggest badasses on the show.
So, I beg to differ. I think Carol's top
three. Carol's there, too. But to me, Daryl can just shoot anything, man. That guy's crazy.
He's good.
But did anyone think that scene was going to go a different direction? Because I thought Sasha was about to be taken out.
I, for a second, thought Abraham, actually.
Yeah, I thought Abraham.
That's what John said.
Yeah, one or the other, like when it had that feeling, and that's the writers just giving you the tip of the hat, because they know you've actually had this happen before.
Yeah.
Where he goes, you know what, actually I will, and you're thinking that one of them's just going to get taken out.
Yeah.
But no, really, really good. Unfortunately, we never got to find out who the man who gave the wonderful monologue was. Christopher Barry is the actor's name. Mm. Can you imagine, like, you're an actor and that script comes across your table and you're like, I would get this big of a monologue on The Walking Dead, but it would be my only scene.
Right.
And then I'm dead. But, like, he's going to be – he's, like, enshrined in our memories now, because it's such a great scene. And it's such a great monologue, you know?
I also love when he talks about, you know, the way this normally goes is we find somebody and then we take somebody out and then they escort us back to their place. And it's like, you know, it's really awkward after you just killed somebody's best friend that you have to, you know, carpool with him. I'm like, oh, he's such a dick. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good at it. He was really good at it.
He was getting a lot of mind play in that scene, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So this episode was directed by Greg Nicotero, who has now directed 15 episodes. We've seen 13. This is his 13th episode. And he's actually a makeup artist, primarily. Or he was, I should say. He's definitely not primarily a makeup artist anymore. But he's done tons of movies that we all know, and he's going to be directing this one, two more this season. And he also directed the season premiere of season 6, the first episode, which... So I noticed with this one... There's clearly, like, a visual style that he's using, because that first episode of the season, there was, like, all the flashback stuff with the black and white, right, where you're going back and forward in time and using that visually to kind of tell the story. In this episode, you have the stuff with the massacre that we'll talk about later, with the cutbacks, you know, with the color scenes during the daytime and all that. So I really liked his take on this. I think the visual touch and some of the experimental stuff they're doing, the stuff at the end of the episode with the flash cuts to each person fighting... Really cool stuff, right?
No, he's proven to be a very just a great director. Like, I noticed the directed by Greg Nicotero, and I said, man, this guy just knows how to do a good Walking Dead episode, man.
Yeah, he's being rewarded as well. He's an executive producer on Fear the Walking Dead, so they gave him quite a bit of run.
Yeah, and a quick shout out to a friend of the show, anybody who watches the channel Film Theorist. Actually, he did an episode that went up this past week, and a lot of that episode is all about how is the Walking Dead going to end, and it's all a theory about the decomposition of the walkers and the time frame that that's going to take before the world can begin to get back to normalcy. And he references Nicotero and the fact that the walkers in season one look drastically different than most of the walkers towards the later seasons because they're decomposing at a different rate than a body would decompose in the real world. And it kind of gives a cool theory behind the time frame of how much of this show do we have left where it is this as the status quo of the world versus if somebody dies, they become a walker, but the majority are still living people versus walkers. So it's a cool concept.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's really interesting. And it's also, I've this last 2 weeks, you know, Walking Dead gets replayed on AMC constantly.
Just a little bit.
I mean, constantly. And for good reason. Like, even when it's like the 14th showing of an episode, it still gets higher ratings than like anything on the CW probably ever gets. I mean, that's just a guess, by the way. Much love to CW. But, no, like, I've been watching a bunch of the old episodes this last week or two, and then just today I watched the three previous to this one to catch up, and it's really amazing. You don't notice until you go back to watch the old ones how accurately they've kept everybody's transformation physically going.
Like,
Even, like, the dirt on their clothes, the length of their hair, everybody looks so much cleaner and younger in the beginning, you know? It hasn't been that long, but they all just look so much more weathered. The color of their skin, even. Everybody looks more tan, like they've been outside more.
Just dirt. They just roll people in dirt.
It's like, okay, their detail
this
dirt.
Season you roll in dirt for 5 minutes. Next season you roll in dirt for 7 minutes just to keep getting you darker and darker.
Yeah, 100%. So anyway, I love the bazooka scene. I thought that was a great opening. Yep. Probably, do we think maybe like the best cold open the show's ever had?
I would say probably one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best.
It's definitely up there, yeah.
Yeah, like a really, really powerful start.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely... So that scene went differently than it went in the comics. I mean, with no specific detail because, spoiler alert, I'm going to mention the comics right now. But that aside, the show does seem to be increasingly more and more getting to be, like, directly from the comics. Like the panels almost are showing up now. I'm seeing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that when we get to the Carl-ish story. Like, that, it's literally shot-for-shot recreations happening at that point.
I think that's really interesting. We talked about this at the end of last season, how when they gave us that Negan on the road and all that stuff, and how much it feels like the show is now playing to that audience.
Yeah.
It really feels like if you're a fan of the comics and you're watching the show, you get rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of makes it hard because now if we get it locked in, our expectations are going to be attached. Now we as the comic fans are going to feel the most surprised when things don't go our way.
Well, and I think they give a good balance on the show, though. I mean, it's like you're kind of saying, right now it seems to be steering more a comic book, but they always throw us a whammy with something else with the characters.
Yeah.
So it's like right when you think that you're expecting to see what is like the comic book, they throw something totally different at us. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always about adaptations. When you're adapting from something good, like think of Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. They adapt from that, and it's such a great show because it's such great content. The comics itself are known to be just really, really good comics.
Yeah.
So it's smart for them to adapt something that's accepted so well and it's loved. The comics are loved.
I'm personally, I said this again at the end of the mid-season, but I'm so excited for the next bit because there's definitely seems to be a couple... distinct sort of like chapter changes, almost like eras of the story that the comic gives you. And this next one with Negan is a very, very cool piece And then after that is probably my favorite. So the future looks very bright. Let's talk about the next piece of the show, unless you want to add something. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I haven't been this excited for a character like Negan since the governor, you know, kind of entered the scene. So it's kind of like that same type of buildup that I feel that the show is kind of delivering for us right now.
Yeah, and spoiler alert right now, just that, well, I won't even say
it. Don't say it yet.
Yeah.
Don't say it yet.
I was going to say, they announced the casting. So if you go look it up, he looks awesome, and I think he's going to really fit the character well. So let's move on to the next bit. Let's talk about the Andersons, the family that used to be the Andersons.
Formerly known as the Andersons.
Formerly known as the Andersons. So this is a little weird, right? Because it opened up last season, but it's the beginning of this season.
Yeah.
Where I could have sworn it was light out when they give you the tease where Sam says mom.
It got dark really, really quick. But he was doing the mom thing right as he walked out of the door.
Yeah.
And then there was definitely a time lapse between where that was, and then they must have gotten him to shut up, versus when they finally are like, okay, this is the plan, blah, 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 and then he said mom again. There was definitely, those were two separate times.
Okay, because they lead you to believe in the show that, in the previews, that, like, that's going to be the moment. He's going to say it, and then he's going to get taken out.
Right.
I think we were all just expecting a direct cut to that moment, mm-hmm. and then just carnage. I was thrown for a loop because of the way that the Glenn thing happened earlier this season. Mm-hmm. I was like, are they really going to, they're not just going to tease this, are they?
Right.
Right?
No, and coming from the side of the table that has read the comics, I mean, we purposely didn't say how we thought everything was going to go down because we read that scene and we had such anticipation for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, oh, maybe they're not doing it. And they teased us for just a second before everything fell apart. And like we mentioned earlier, it's a shot-for-shot recreation of the comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the bits that happen. Yeah. It's that, that's the part of it where I'm like, wow, like if we really keep going in this direction, I mean, there's some pretty wild stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, incredible scene, really well done, very well shot. I love the pacing, and I love that they pause for a second. They're talking, you know, you get, would you guys, like Gabriel, would you have given Gabriel your baby?
No, we had a big dilemma while we were watching that show. I was actually really surprised that Rick allowed him that type of authority over Judith, especially without sending someone else. Because you could see Michonne's face when he said that, and she kind of was like, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We see later kind of that Rick loses it. I almost was starting to think, like, was he in a place where he just... he was still starting to kind of lose his shit a little bit, you know? And it's like, why is he giving... out of all the people that you're going to trust, you know...
the most chicken shit
the
person.
The most chicken shit person, you're giving your baby that. And he did it effortless. Like, he didn't even seem to really think about it too much.
That was my thing. My thing is, like, maybe Rick would do that, but why would he do it? Like, yeah, take her.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you haven't even thought about this, man. Just take a second, think about it, what you're doing right now. Because he just felt like he was just giving Judith right away, and I was like, oh, are you sure?
Do you guys think that maybe he sort of took a moment, evaluated the options, and then was just like, there's not a better option than this? The better option is keep the baby, and maybe the baby just gets massacred. This is maybe the safest option.
I don't know. I would always worry that he would be the one, like, if stuff, like, really went down, he would let the baby get dropped to at least get himself, like, some second of safety. Like, I wouldn't have trusted him, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I would not have trusted
Gabriel. I would have kept her in the house by herself probably before I gave her to Gabriel, honestly.
I mean, put her in a room.
Put her in a room.
And barricade the door up on the outside. Yeah.
And try to come back. Yeah. I don't know. You just never know where you're going to end up. That's the other thing.
I mean, it's true.
But then
it's
that also speaks to the idea that why would you give it to someone else? Because what if you get separated from the baby?
Absolutely.
Which he has before.
Yeah. He has. Yeah. We've seen it.
That was surprising. But then the sequence of events after they kept going, I love that Sam has the freak out moment.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you guys catch that bit on Fear, Talking Dead, where they the quick interview with the two Anderson kids?
No.
And he's working with Carol. He's like got these, he's like a bowl cut and the sweet glasses. And he's like working with Carol was a complete joy. She and I have a lot in common. You know, we go antiquing together. Wow, this kid.
This kid's like an old soul. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of brings up the question though, you know, when Sam does have the freak out, is a little bit of that on Carol? Because part of what leads to his freak out is he starts having the flashback of the things she said about the monsters.
The monsters will come.
That they're going to come. They're going to get you. Tear you apart while you're still alive, and you're not going to be able to run. And that's exactly what happened. So did she traumatize him too much to the point where she's she's being too vicious for this world, which I, you know.
She's the ultimate boogie woman, right?
Yeah, but this kid was already pretty traumatized. I mean, obviously he had his issues about, you know, the things that were happening with his dad. He was having issues with the wolves in the house, you know. I mean, it was a lot of things going on with the kid. If anybody's going to have the breakdown, I'm not surprised that Sam was the one who had the breakdown.
I mean, let's be honest, guys. Going into this episode, Sam had zero chance. I mean, he didn't, like, if you would ask me going into the episode, like, will Sam survive this episode?
Right.
What's the percentage? I would have said zero. Actually zero.
I mean, that's like when we went and watched the Ronda Rousey fight last time, right. And people are like, what are the chances Ronda's going to lose? I'm like, there's no chance she's going to lose. That's how strongly I felt about it. But like, I got screwed on that one. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, something that I thought of, too, was the fact that, was it because he stopped moving and started whimpering? Is that why they jumped on him? Because I was wondering that. I was like, oh, all of a sudden they... Because it's all the smell, right? They have the guts on
them. The smell and the sound.
The sound.
So as soon as he started whimpering, that's when they were like, oh, this is not one of us.
Because if they get close enough to you and you make a sound, I think they'll just take a bite, just to take a bite.
And we were kind of talking about this during the show, too. John, you brought this up, the fact that, I mean, they're covered from neck down, but their faces aren't covered.
At all.
So I do have a problem a little bit with the faces. Yeah.
Well, that's why
covered.
He got bit in the neck and the head, actually,
the top
too.
Of the head. Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, even if
that
you just put a little spat of, you know, forehead on the side of the cheeks or something, but there's nothing on all their faces. Yeah. And I'm thinking the body chemistry of like their sweat and things like that, there has to be a certain smell that comes off of them still, a human smell.
Yeah, there's a pheromone that still comes off. I regret not going back to clips of the first season just because we didn't have enough time, but I want to look back at that once we're done recording and be like, did they cover themselves face to face? And I feel I remember seeing where they did that.
I think I remember Rick and Glenn covering their faces, and I remember Rick had an intestine hanging.
It was hung like a really big necklace. Right? Yeah, it was like Mardi Gras beads.
Yeah. So this one did seem a little bit like, is that enough?
Obviously it wasn't.
Clearly not, especially with, you know, a loud yelling kid, you know.
Also when they all like huddled together before it happened, and they seemed to be talking at almost like a low normal volume. I was so surprised, like, you guys are still out in the middle, like, you don't want me talking just like this. Like, you seem like you should be talking really quietly.
Right.
Yeah. I think I yelled at the table, and we also had Roxy sitting at the table watching with us, and I was like, shouldn't somebody just knock this kid out right now and just carry him? Like, shut him up.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was hoping that Rick would, like, put him in a sleeper hold or something.
Yeah, just cover his mouth or something.
Yeah, just put him in a sleeper and then just pick him
up.
Yeah,
but I think all that movement, though, it couldn't have been any worse than what actually happened,
I feel
like. Well, I mean, yeah, that's true.
So Nick Cotero was saying that they put a prosthetic in the walker's mouth. That's how they did the shot, because they didn't want to put a prosthetic on his head, so that when he goes to the skull for the bite right here, the prosthetic starts bleeding from the walker's mouth.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that way
it gets
to be a person, and it's bleeding down his face, which I thought was pretty cool.
I would love to be a walker just for a day on the show, just to see how they make you die.
Our boy Jay Heagley, who was on the show, got to be a walker for just
a
second. That's a guy who deceived us. I just watched his scene again in the two
great
episodes
scene.
Ago.
Bastard.
Yeah, he's there, and he gets stabbed in the head. But anyway, so the whole Anderson family gets wiped out in the span of about 120 seconds. The bloodline is ceased. I'm wearing a tie tonight in memoriam.
I see the skulls on the tie.
This is my goodbye to, you know, to Jesse, Sam, and
Boys to Men just came to mind. It's so hard to say goodbye in my head all of a sudden.
And Ron, there you go.
I also did like how they, you know, at the table when we're all watching, they started showing the flashbacks of Jesse, and then it's like, flashback, a positive moment, and then he realizes that Jesse's still holding on to Carl, and all the flashbacks are hitting in red, too, because it's like, well, anything you had is gone now, so I just have to save my kid.
I did think it was interesting, right, that you were expecting the last one to be them kissing, right? That's like the obvious cut, too. They didn't give it to us, though, right? Which is good, because that's really corny. But I like the cutbacks, the color versus the such like bleak. And then it just gets so grim. He hacks the hand off.
Yep.
I mean, just like that, and that's directly.
That's a direct recreation of the comic
that
we talked about.
Shot for shot. But I mean, just so brutal. And then you look at Ron, and he's losing it.
Oh, yeah.
No. Oh, and Jesse screams, right? She lets out like the blood.
Yeah, she's the one that let the scream out.
Yeah. Yeah, she just loses it. She does not keep it together well. And then Ron, and I love that Michonne proactively did that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She had to. I mean, the kid's holding a gun. Like, what are you going to do? Let him
take
shoot
out
him?
Somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, well, a lot of the times in this show, somebody holds a gun on someone else and it gets defused. I mean, even just the previous episode, Enid holding a gun on Glenn. Like,
also a kid who just saw his little brother get eaten and mom get eaten. Yeah. And Rick
and he's
chopped
coming
her
at,
hand,
And
too.
He's coming at Rick directly.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean? So,
completely. It was the right move.
Yeah, I guess. But for me, I was like, man, really? You're going to pull it? You're just blaming them? He's like, screw it. I'm going to kill. I don't know. I got upset for that.
He always sucked.
He's lost every time.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the same kid who's been after Carl.
I know.
I'm really that surprised that this took place. I mean, of course he's going to go after Rick. He blames him for so much stuff as it is. So.
I mean, on some level, I think if you were going to like rank them in terms of like not having a chanceness, it would be like definitely Sam was like 100%, and then I would say like Ron would have given like a solid 55. Jesse, for this episode, I would have only given her like a 25% chance to bite the dust. Yeah. Like, there's the comic reference, but like, that's one of those ones where you think maybe they're gonna deviate.
That's one where they could have deviated, and it wouldn't have been it wouldn't have been as bad a moment for the readers' side of it. Like, we would have been okay with that one, I feel like.
I'm looking at this poll here that I posted about an hour and a half ago, and the question, it's on my Twitter, you can vote on this if you want, at Ben Bitten Media, but the question was, was this episode what you thought it was going to be? Was it A, top 3 all-time, B, top 10 all-time, or C, just another episode? And 22% of people are saying this was just another episode.
I want to know what those people have, like, thought were the best ones, because this... I put it in the top 10, because...
Me too.
You know, I...
Yeah.
Chris Hardwick said it was critical. The number one, his favorite number one episode so thus far.
Like, for me, when I posted that, my feeling... I hedged my bets and voted on top 10, but... Now that I think about it, I would have a hard time coming up with 3 that I liked more. Mm-hmm. So I think really this is actually a top 3 for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I'm going to put it in top 5. I mean,
well, that's not an option.
Yeah. Okay, right. top 3. I'll put it in top 3 for sure.
Yeah.
For me, top 10 for sure. It was definitely. It was such a well-paced episode.
Yep.
Because pacing is always an issue in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But this one was such a good-paced episode. Something was happening. It wasn't rushed, but something was happening every single moment.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so go ahead.
I was going to say, we actually didn't even conclude that scene yet. We talked about the stab, but the big piece of the stab is what it led to.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll get to that in 1 second because I have a question.
Fair.
So it strikes me, as having watched the whole show now, that there's two types of Walking Dead episodes. There appear to be action episodes, and then there's character building episodes. Mm-hmm. And now, it's not to say that every action episode doesn't have some character building, or that the character building episodes don't have some action, but you have very much episodes. The extreme examples would be like the episode with Morgan and Eastman earlier this season is a total character building episode.
Yep, 100%.
You know, let's just say flashback episodes, or like Beth in the hospital, stuff like that. You know, Beth and Daryl when they're holed up in a cabin. That's the stuff where you're like, this is very much just supposed to give me a sense of who I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Action episodes are like the massacre on Alexandria. Obviously, that's an extreme example of it. But usually you don't get as much character building in an episode like that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, the deaths in this episode, primarily the Andersons being the big ones, the huge ones. Like, how do you guys feel about tertiary characters? I'm putting up quotes for anybody on audio. Getting taken out as like, and we're supposed to feel they have an impact because they've been in for a season and a half now. But to some degree, it happens, and you're like, I just kind of knew you guys were all going to die from the beginning. You're not real deaths. You're just there to tempt me.
Yeah.
Whereas when you kill a real character, like when we thought Glenn was dead, that's like impactful. Like you feel shaken to your core at the end of an episode like that. Versus this, where you're like, yeah, I guess like it's fine, but like life will just go back to the way it was before these characters were in the show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I absolutely know what you mean, because to me that's exactly what I thought going into the episode. I was like, well, you're not really heartbroken for the Andersons. You're like, yeah, you know, we were with you for like a season and a half maybe.
Yeah.
But whereas like if you kill a core character or even the supporting characters like an Abraham or a Tara or a Rosita, it's different. It's definitely different, because it's almost like the writers are afraid to go there too much.
Yeah.
To be like, we're going to kill off one of your favorites, so we're just going to kill these off.
I sort of disagree, because I feel like they were trying to build some type of emotional connection with all three of those characters, because we saw, like, you know, the first half of the season where, you know, the connection with Sam and Carol, and we see that his mom, a lot of times, the connection between the two, and more of the history of knowing what happened to his dad. With Rick, we obviously see he and Jesse kind of, she's not Lori's replacement, but we finally see Rick kind of start to have feelings for someone. So you maybe find an emotional connection with that. And then, of course, the older brother, I mean, we just see him as the villain, you know, so we kind of connect with him in that sense, because you want him dead.
I felt like Jesse had a shot of becoming one of the secondary characters.
Completely.
You know, deviating from what the comic was, I thought she could have survived this, whether, you know, Sam and his brother died. I thought she had the shot. And that's where I was, you know, it actually had some impact to me, because when Sam bit it, we were yelling in excitement at the table. We're like, oh my God. Yeah, yeah. And then I'm watching, I was literally turning in out of the corner of my eye watching their reactions for Jesse getting bit, because it was like, you had hope she had a shot of getting out of it.
She was definitely the surprising one, for sure. Because you expected the kids, but her, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like I said, maybe 25% for me was the thought. And so that's where I only, like, pose the question about it, because it's something you notice in a lot of television. It's not just this show. We move now, we're in, like, this era with the, like, premium dramas where it's much, much less taboo to kill off main characters. Game of Thrones is the ultimate show for it, but this show does it now, and I covered, like, CW The 100 on for AfterBuzz, and main characters die in that show as well, and it's not like it's crazy like it used to be.
Yeah.
So with Jesse, there was some part of me that thought maybe it would happen, but also she's not – didn't feel totally necessary to kill her there. Mm-hmm. You know, in the comics, it serves a little bit different of a purpose. It's just there's some characters that don't exist, but here it's like she really could have existed.
She could have kept going.
Yeah. Because killing the kids there, both of them – would have actually had a very, very, with her alive and having to see it, impactful if she's still alive. Yeah. If she's battle broken and now Rick sort of has to take care of her and she becomes like baggage almost, mm-hmm. that's just as interesting. Yeah. But I guess they're clearing the way for something else.
Well, there's one thing that even in the comic bothered me, where she's holding on to Carl, and I feel like the second that you're getting bit from every single angle, how did she have the strength to maintain like that vice-like grip on Carl? That still bothers me.
Did you see the difference in reaction when she gets bitten? She's just completely stone faced,
right? Which is why I'm shocked she was even able to hold on.
Yeah, but the muscle reflex—you know, your muscles still maintain memory. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's lots of times in like certain movies and things like that, or even you see hands getting chopped off in certain things, and they're still shooting the gun. I mean, you're still maintaining some type of muscle memory, you know, with that. Fair. So,
yeah, I'm kind of with you though. For a second, I thought, I was like, wouldn't it be easier to pry?
Yeah,
wouldn't
you be able to just get her
and just chop and chop? I don't know. That was just me too.
But yeah. Speaking of shooting a gun,
right. So yeah, he takes the Michonne sword through his back. Ron does. And we think, okay, like we dodge it. The Andersons are gone. Threat neutralized. Rick's going to deal with this. Oh, wait, Carl's face is halfway gone.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're getting a really good shot of Michonne, you're getting a great shot of Rick, and then the anticipation of, like, oh, God, they're going to recreate the shot. And they did an amazing job.
Yeah, they did.
Directly from the comics. Great. And one of the gorier panels, like, when it happens in the comics.
Panels.
Yeah, very shocking. And reminiscent of Gus Fring's moment.
Yeah.
It's been years. I hope I didn't just spoil that. I won't even give the context, just in case you don't know. But reminiscent of Gus Fring's moment.
Yep.
Very impactful, very exciting, and had the same kind of like, whoa, like the character pausing for a moment before completely collapsing.
Yeah. And the gore of it was great.
Like, yeah.
They did such a believable job of this is what it would look like if you got nicked in the face with a bullet. Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, as you guys are comic readers, as someone who's like dabbled in the comics, not really read them all. Mm-hmm. For a second, you got to be like, oh, he's dead. I mean, his face is freaking blown off. So you're like, and then he falls down, and I'm like, yo, Carl, he just died. But then you find out that he's not dead. But for a second, you still think, oh, he might be dead. Which is why I think I'm getting ahead of myself. But I was going to say at the end of the episode, let us know.
Because
it could be that you're like, you could probably think that he might.
And I don't know if they want to do that to us twice in a season.
A main is dead.
Yeah. I will go on record now as having taken the time since it's happened to just say, I think that the handling of the Glenn death in the first half of the season was a massive error. Mm. I will say, as somebody, a huge fan of the show, somebody who has a ton of faith in the showrunners and the writers, loves the show to death, I think that the way that was handled was extremely distracting.
And
looking back on it, it made the middle of the season way too much about is Glenn alive or is Glenn dead. It was super distracting. The way that we got the Eastman episode right after, which I think was as a double long, which didn't need to happen. Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, it was hard to appreciate that episode for what it was because of where it was put. And then the two or three episodes before Glenn came back, and he came back in such an unceremonious way. Plus, after him getting shot, you had the Rick in the trailer thing, which was never explained.
Right.
It just ended up as this. It's like completely in the background now. Like that part of the story, like almost doesn't matter that it happened, which I think is a waste. you know?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely felt like the writers were kind of just, I don't know, it seemed like they were like, yeah, shock value. Like, they were like, let's pretend Glenn's dead and everyone's going to go crazy and they were going to be like, Glenn's alive, yay! But it almost felt like cheap because you were like...
To be fair, yeah. It worked.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a genius marketing plan. Yeah. I mean, it made us talk about that forever, you know? And there were so many debates between what was right, what was wrong with it, but it kept the conversation going.
Yeah, on a normal week's episode, people will talk about it on Twitter and everything for the night, and then the next day, maybe for the first few hours of the day, but, you know, by the time you get to Wednesday or Thursday, nobody's talking about it anymore. But the depth of, or the questioning of Glenn's death, like, that was all over my Twitter feed, and like there would be the pictures of him flipping off of paparazzi with like the meme quotes above it and stuff like that. Like, it did work.
Yeah, I get it. From that point of view, it worked. But to that end, I think your point that they gave us a little bit of an Easter egg at the end with Carl's hand moving, it is the right thing because we didn't, as somebody,
you didn't need to question it at that point. I think is what you. What you want to get to.
Yeah, because, like you said, the difference in the comics. So anyway, Carl gets shot. They, you know, they're running back in. Denise is now back. So let's maybe, before we talk about the resolution of the Carl shot, let's talk about Denise and the wolf quickly. Mm-hmm. So we saw, you know, this really obnoxious sequence at the end of last season where Morgan was just being a completely unreasonable pacifist and putting everybody in danger. And Carol gets... like beamed in the head. She's had now multiple concussions, it seems like. You know, the wolf has not been fixed up entirely yet. Now he gets fixed. The niece is in the room. Carol and Morgan are fighting. They get both knocked out, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Morgan knocks out Carol with like a sweet body slam, and then the wolf knocks out Morgan, and then takes the niece, and that's how it ends with the gun. So now they're on the run, and there's a kind of a moment, right? The wolf sort of has a moment. Mm-hmm. He seems to kind of be with Denise in a playful, like, kind of compassionate way. He's not...
He actually sounds somewhat human rather than the total lunatic that he's been giving off the entire time.
But I didn't buy it. Because how can he transform that quickly?
I agree.
I mean, he went from literally hitting Carol and, you know, and Morgan and fleeing and he's a wolf to this compassionate thing with Denise. I just didn't buy it completely.
See, I don't know if he was ever fully bought in on the wolf thing. And the reason being, if he was fully bought in on that, when those two are knocked out, he could have killed them.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, true. And he gets out there, and then as they're going to go scale the wall, he takes a bite on the arm. Benedict Samuel is the actor who plays the Alpha Wolf, who, you know, is gone now, but really handsome guy, Australian accent. Played a creepy dude with yellow teeth really well.
Yes. Like yellow with like flecks of black stains.
Yeah, there's like black stains on the teeth.
Yeah, we kept saying at the table, we're like, God, she's probably just like, kill me now because your breath is the most rancid thing. It'd be better to die than to talk to you right now. Yeah.
I remember saying like the beginning of the season, like he was one of those people. I was like, I can't imagine the actor who plays this guy like going and checking out at the grocery store and not getting like dirty looks. He just seems like so creepy. Yeah. And then like seeing him on the couch on Talking Dead was like
totally different.
Super dapper. He's got a suit. He's well groomed. He's got like the charming Australian accent. I'm pretty sure that an Australian accent makes anybody like more charming by this much. Yeah, like 100%. Like, if you were going to rank the charming quality of different accents, I think Australia might be the top. But we can talk about that later. So
you can put that on your page.
I'll leave that on the page. I'll post the tweet. What's the most charming accent?
But what was cool was it didn't just end with him getting the bite in the arm and just reverting to being feral. They actually... She was like, you took a bite from me. I am going to try to help you.
Yeah.
So it made her kind of... You know, prove it was what's the whole do no harm thing that a doctor has to take the vow of. She's like, even though you are probably one of the biggest scumbag, terrible people ever, I'm still not going to let you die on my watch.
So she says, let me get you back to the infirmary and I will save your life. And this is also part of her character transformation, taking a character who we've only seen bits and pieces of character development. Mm-hmm. There was the kiss with Tara, which was a big moment, which I think feels in some ways like it's a plot point that was just kind of passed over. Very briefly touched on, has not been referenced again, but that's I think the last time that we had a big moment. Her growth as a doctor has been happening slowly, but this was a big moment because she goes back and she's almost back and she's gonna save him, and then Carol takes him out with a rifle.
And that almost seems like she got a confidence boost off of that too.
You know, handgun, like
super confidence.
Was it a handgun?
It was a handgun.
Abraham has the rifle.
Rosita's handgun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they get back inside, and they're like, are you okay? She's like, sure. Doesn't even explain that, he was going to try to, you know, I was going to try to save him. He saved my life. Doesn't even say it. But then, now we wheel back around to Carl, who's who's being run back. And they say, is he bitten? And she says,
no.
And she's like, starts ordering what she needs. So that's like a moment where she's saying that because she believes it, not because she knows. Right? She's like, I believe he's going to be okay kind of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that what we think?
Well, then also, not to fast forward but or go backwards, but we also see that he gets shot by Carol. You know, the wolf gets shot by Carol.
Yeah.
And then taken out completely. And then they go into that particular scene. But, sorry, go back to answer your question. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. So they get inside. And, like, the way she says that, no, he's not bitten. And then she starts, like, that. We do believe that that's just it's blind faith, right? That's what that is? Or do you think there's some reason she knows?
Again, we'd have to probably watch it, but if she saw a face wound,
yeah,
she probably assumes it can't be a bite, because if it's a face wound, there's no coming back from that.
Right.
If it's a bite on the arm, they know they could do it. But if she looks out the window, sees Rick carrying and sees blood on his face, you got to believe that all these people know a wound to the face or neck or something that you cannot cut off,
right,
is death. So yeah. Carl wouldn't have been saved by Rick. Rick would have put him down at the time. He wouldn't have tried to, save my kid kind of thing.
Yeah, she knows Rick is smart and wouldn't take someone who's been bitten
in the face. Yeah,
sure. So she gets everything. She gets everything set up. She gets her towels. She gets her gauze. All that gets back. And then at that point, the only other part of this we haven't covered yet. Well, I suppose there's Tara Rosita and Eugene and their reaction to this. Right. Initially, it's Rosita saying, no, that man needs her. She's a doctor. We have to deal with what we have here. That's her justification for not going after her, right?
Yeah.
And is that just placating Tara to get her to calm down, you think?
I think so, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, because she sees all the walkers outside, and she's like, we got no shot.
Yeah, we have
calm
no hope.
Down. We're going to die if we go out there, so just calm down.
But the idea that this man needs a doctor and she's a doctor is absurd, right?
She
doesn't mean that. Can she mean that? There's no way she can mean that.
No, I don't think she really
means that. It's finding one small shred of reality and focusing on that rather than the utter panic. I think that was just, placating her to calm her down.
So, okay, at this point now, by the way, and this is not talking about Abraham, but Rosita and Eugene, Rosita's thing with Abraham seems like it's
pretty done.
Yeah, right, because he kind of professed his love when he was on his road trip, or at least his interest. And Rosita, like, what's the deal with, like, her thing with Eugene? Like, she just keeps, like shitting on him. Like, she just really is like, you're just a big sissy. Like, you need to man up. You're a huge sissy. And then he has a moment where he goes out with the machete at the end of the episode, right?
To be fair, if I was in that world and still alive and offing zombies and stuff, and there was somebody who was utterly worthless, I would be doing the same thing.
Yeah,
it's like, step your game up.
Yeah. Same way. I was with Rosita the whole way. I was like, yeah, you're pointless. Every time you try and do something, you don't. So shut up. Like,
to be fair, I also would have died within the first 30 days.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I probably wouldn't be. I was thinking, actually, I'm much more like Sam when I was a kid. I had a bowl cut. I was kind of like chubby and like pretty worthless. Like
you left cookies at the top of the stairs.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, I think I would have died.
You would have died too.
If I was a kid. I think as an adult, I'd be okay. But
there was also that moment last time where Rosita was training people with a machete and he just sucked at it.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's part of it, too, where she was just like...
She's like, is this too loud for you?
Yeah.
And he makes the comment about, like, open-toed shoes. Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not in a place now where they can carry another man. Everyone needs to help each other, in a sense, and man up. And, you know, we see Gabriel, actually, I hate to say it because I didn't really like the character, but he's kind of transitioning to a different character. And it's time for Eugene to do the same thing.
Well, that's what Rick has always been saying. You know, Eugene was the one who didn't fit their group because he was the one who couldn't hold his own. But then all of Alexandria, like, that's where he was like, these people can't survive without us.
Right.
And that leads to his revelation at the end of, they can.
Yeah, and we need them. Like, there's just the sheer numbers for support.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess my question is with Rosita and Eugene, it seems like they're building, they give them a fair amount of screen time together.
Mm-hmm.
They've given, like, a lot of her stepping on him. And then he's had a moment, a kind of a revelation moment where he's come around. He went out there to be brave. So I guess what I'm wondering is...
Pity sex?
Something. I mean, because Abraham's going to come back.
I don't want to see that.
And there's going to be some fallout.
So weird.
I mean, maybe, but they're setting it up for there to be some fallout, clearly, with the way that he professed his love on that road trip.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any, like, sort of feeling on, like, do you feel anything between Eugene and Rosita? Like, some kind of explosion, anything, or just no expectation?
I think she's there to motivate him to kind of step up his game. I mean, I don't see anything kind of romantic between those two, but I mean, that would be quite shocking. But I see her there as like the person who pushes him. You know,
I guess I just mean it seems like because from the beginning when they were on the road together, when Abraham and when she were together, he was sort of like the third wheel all the time. So he's been in the fold sort of as a relationship for a while. I'm wondering why they keep putting the two of them on screen together. That's like sort of the question.
I mean, it could be just, you know, the numbers of, you know, the world's ending. There aren't as many people if you're going to go for it. I mean, he definitely crushes on her. She's probably way hotter than any girl he's ever had at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, no guy with a mullet gets a girl that hot. Let's be clear.
Yeah, I think it's going
to
be more...
Not to be judgy.
It's going to be more of like a mutual respect thing now. Almost like, yeah, you hold your own. Finally, you step up. I respect you now. You know, I'll train you now, and I'll have a good relationship with you. Like a good kind of buddy relationship. I see that happening.
Yeah, okay. I want to ask about Enid and Glenn and Maggie, because there was... Did you guys get like at all choked up a little bit when they first saw each other? Like just like the moment where like she's up there and she sees him running at her and like that's the first time they've seen each other? Be honest.
I didn't get a chance to because there was so much going on. I mean, they didn't even really have a chance to have a reaction off of each other, you know,
that
much.
It was so frenetic.
Yeah, it was so much going on. And no, I mean, I didn't necessarily.
It was more like, please don't die. Please don't die in front of each other. That would be awful.
Terrible.
Don't, yeah, please.
So yeah, yeah, me neither.
Yeah, somebody at the table was screaming, don't kill Glenn now. Please don't kill Glenn now. Freaking out
at
the table.
How sweet of a moment would that have been? That would have, I mean, people would have been heartbroken.
I would have been the biggest asshole on the planet. I would have been laughing so much. I would have just, I would have been so happy if that happened.
If he had gotten
just to
apart.
See the internet freak out about it. People would have
I would have been
nuts.
The one freaking out about it. As a massive Glenn fan, I think that was me who you're referring to.
Oh, yeah.
Don't kill, that was me. I was like, please don't kill Glenn right now. Because to me, it's like, you did all this buildup, and then all of
just
a sudden
to off
he,
him.
He just kills, like, right next episode. That would have been...
That would have been so funny.
I got a little choked up, I gotta be honest. Not full tears, but just, like, a little bit.
A little,
like,
just dropping out.
I'm a sucker for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, I've made it pretty clear. I love Lauren Cohen. She's my favorite. I love her. And
what is it with hosts of the show?
I know.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And just like seeing them reunited was just very touching. But anyway, so Enid, he insists and forces Enid to stick with him because she wants to run away. Yeah. And quite honestly, the relationship between those two is pretty obnoxious for me. I'm not a big fan of it. She is obnoxious to me as a character, and Glenn's misplaced faith in her and insistence on including her, and then her, like, a lot of these characters have these like revelation moments. And I realized that, like, if you were in a world that was falling apart, being eaten by zombies, you probably would need your fellow man or woman to, like, lift you up sometimes and just give you a pep talk because you watch your friends and family die. So you lose faith in humanity and you need to kind of bring it back up. So that's what he's doing. It doesn't change the fact that, like, she's just slowing him down most of the time. Like,
which is why I felt like he wanted to leave her.
At that point, Glenn got to church.
Yeah, because Glenn knows I'm smart, I'm quick, I've done this a million times. And then remember last episode when he was, a few episodes ago when he was leading that group and he got a bunch of them killed. You could almost think that he's like, well, I'm faster, I can do this.
Yeah.
But, I'm the same way about her, man. Because to me, that episode when she pointed the gun at his head, that pissed me off so much. I'm like,
seriously,
what are you doing, you little girl? This guy's trying to help you, and you're trying to kill him. Like, to me,
well, what was the quote? I know you wrote it down, because you were writing down six pages of notes.
I know.
It was the verse that seemed to be what changed it for her. It was the Bible verse that switched
around. It was faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
And it was James something.
It was James 2:26.
James 2:26. There you go.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that changed it for her.
I didn't either, per se. But also, honestly, the way they kind of built her story this time, and she had the transition, and then she all of a sudden now is like, I'm going to follow you, Glenn, wherever you go. I thought she honestly was going to bite it this episode. You know, because I was like, oh, okay, this is the typical Walking Dead thing. They start to kind of transition this character to where you're like, oh, I have a different feeling about them. They've grown. She's gone.
From a fan standpoint, she's kind of a woman without a country. Like, she without Ron in the picture anymore, and with Carl, you know, being presumably out for a little while at least, or recovering, unless she and Carl have like a sort of a moment of reconciliation, like, she has no real relationship to anybody.
No.
She's just kind of a floater from the old from this old community who doesn't particularly seem to want to be there. I just wonder what they're going
to
do with her.
Well, I feel like that's maybe the why they're introducing her so much to be on the Glenn side of things, because then she does kind of fall into having that that connection with him.
I agree. I think she's going to be more like Glenn's like little sister kind of thing. Yeah, they're going to establish that relationship.
Okay,
so that's where I think it's going.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so they get back. I'm talking about Daryl in the oil
the tanker.
And they make a lake of fire, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It was really cool looking. And
which I felt was overkill, because if you have a limited number of rockets, why would you use one rocket to light that on fire other than just the noise? Because I feel like they could have shot one or two guns off in the air, gotten the exact same effect, rather than shooting a rocket into a small lake filled with gasoline.
How, in that quick moment when you're needing to think quickly, like, do you have fire or a match or like some way to light the lake on fire
like
from a distance?
Do. I feel like you could throw paper with on fire. I feel like
how do you get,
I feel
how
like
do you
that was
how
overkill.
It wouldn't stay burned.
I feel like that's overkill.
Burn.
Yeah, because
the gasoline I was fine with. The rocket launcher I thought was the overkill.
Yeah,
but it was so cool, man.
Yeah, there's only like six or four rockets. Actually, I wish I had the image right in front of me, because you see when he opens the case.
How many were in there?
I think it might have been three,
something like that. Yeah. But
the use of the first rocket, I totally agreed with, though, for the record.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Sweet, great, great use of rocket.
Yeah, and then at that moment too, you kind of realize that Rick and Daryl kind of single-handedly took back Alexandria.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much,
yeah. It's crazy to think that, but it's true. If Daryl hadn't done that, then who knows what would have happened.
So let's move into that, because this is the first major shift in both in the show and in the comics. And it's they do it the same way, where the characters, they make a pretty bold resolve, like resolution here, to change the way they think about the world, which is, these things are slow. We can kill them. This is our world. We're going to live here. We can fight them off. We don't need to just constantly be running from them. And they kill hundreds of these things to take back Alexandria. And this unites Alexandria and all the folks that originally they didn't think they could count on.
And then a bunch of the randoms who were like looking at the screen were like, who's that? And we're like, oh, that's literally somebody who's
lots
been in a background before. Yeah.
Like the Flight 47 survivors. Is that, what's the lost flight? What is it? Flight. Lost? Flight? What's the flight number?
I never watched Lost.
Really?
No.
I don't remember the flight.
Well, in Lost, the point was that there would always be a bunch of people that were on the plane
randoms.
In the background.
Yeah.
At any point in time, they could just bring into the show. Same sort of thing,
yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
You get to see a bunch of them here.
Well, not knowing the population of the town, it's super convenient to be able to do that.
Exactly. exactly. So they all go out there and they fight everybody off. This is after Rick just sees that Carl's taking a bullet to the head and he doesn't know what's going to happen. He's going to go take his anger out in a very, like, Tyrese in the prison moment. Mm-hmm. Or I guess in the comics it was Tyrese in the... Or in the show, it was Tyrese in the woods, right?
He went missing in the woods.
Yeah.
He just went off on his own. He just
billion
went
walkers.
For it.
Yeah. So they take it back, and then Rick has this monologue. Everybody's kind of healing. They're in the infirmary, and Rick has this monologue with Carl when you see Carl's hand move just at the end, where he's essentially saying, I made a decision. These people have value. We can make a better life. We can rebuild the wall. We can live in this world, and I want to show you.
I want to show you the new world, yeah.
How'd you guys feel about that monologue? The acting, the delivery behind it?
I mean, Andrew Lincoln is, to me, he's such an underrated actor. To me, every single episode that I see Rick, to me, Andrew Lincoln has brought such a great performance to everything. I thought it was a great monologue. To me, the only thing that I was kind of hesitating with was, I feel like with the whole rebuilding the wall part is when I was like, are you sure? Because to me, every time they try and do something, it always backfires. Mm-hmm. Like, whether it be the wolves, but now it's going to be, like, another group who's going to try and see this big wall and be like, hey, let's go kill those people.
Right.
Because I think everything else was great, him trusting the people of Alexandria, but that moment, he's like, let's rebuild the walls. I was like, oh.
Well, as opposed to not.
Well, true. I mean, to be fair, what's the other option?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the other option? You know, you go out.
Find more prisons.
Yeah. I mean.
More prisons.
But you don't know how many wolves are left.
Because
Yeah, there could still be more wolves watching them. That might not have been every one of the wolves that tried to kill them. There could still be more out there.
Yeah, but they need to regroup before they could go out hunting.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They can't take the offensive yet.
True.
Yeah.
True.
And the people that they have there, maybe that new group, the new people can be trained, as like the old, and then they're more able to deal with the wolves if they come back.
Right.
True. I'm trying to figure out how Morgan is still just alive and hasn't been confronted by everyone as like, you're super dangerous, and
you almost got
Denise killed,
yeah.
And you almost got Rick killed, and you don't even use a gun or a knife. You just use this bow staff. How does he even kill zombies with a bow staff? He just whacks him in the head and then whacks another one?
Blunt trauma.
Yeah.
just repeated blunt trauma.
Morgan is just, his philosophy is just outdated, man. You can't, I mean, you're in a world full of walkers and psycho people. Sometimes you have to kill some people to save other people.
Well, I did like how Carol said straight up, I should have killed you.
Yeah, and I did get the feeling that that's not going to be something where like, oh, we're all friends now. Because
she's not going to forget.
It's going to linger. So, my feeling on the Andrew Lincoln monologue was that it was solid. The performance was solid. It wasn't supposed to be a really big moment. And I think, unless I'm mistaken, it's another one where panel and words are largely taken directly from the source material. Mm. It felt, I'd have to go back and check it, but it felt a lot like reading the comic in that moment. I liked it, you know, I believe it to some degree, and I do wonder now what the next step, kind of the next step is going to look like.
Well, the next step is going to be Rick and the people who were in Alexandria and dealing with all this are going to find out about Negan's crew, because there's no way that's not coming up in conversation yet. It's just, how do you bring that up already after we just took back the town, like, you know, hours ago, and people are still bleeding and recovering? Daryl's still getting I'm going to do that all
that's
season.
That's like my name.
He's just going to get, like, he just got stitches in his back from when the dude opened him up as they were fighting behind the truck, so.
Yeah, fully.
But I think that's also why they're setting us up with, you know, Rick's monologue, this is the new world, and then it's like you saw everyone come together, even Morgan, they all were fighting together. I felt like it was like off some superhero, you know, comic book.
Yeah, it was the circle scene of the Avengers.
It was the circle scene of the Avengers, you know, and literally, I think that's setting the tone to show us that, you know, this will be the change. So when these other people attack or whatever, this is the new group. So
yeah. I mean, it looks like Rick and the group are probably going to go on the offensive now. I mean, that's what it, I mean, for me, it's going to be the recover quick and then just go to the offensive and start finding some people to.
I could see it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think that probably should bring us to predictions, because we're all kind of wondering now about what the next... There's a lot of predictions, I think, right now.
Yeah?
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Time for After Buzz. Predictions.
It sounds so ominous when they say that on the recording.
I know. And it gets to the flashing lights and all that. Who wants to start? Who wants to start?
I'll start. I will say I'm still going to go with Enid. Is going to bite it next episode, as well as I'm going to go with Aaron.
Next episode?
Or, I mean, Spencer. Excuse me, Spencer.
Spencer and Enid in the next episode.
I think they're going to get it the next episode.
What's the... Do you have, like, an idea of
a zombie or a person?
I think that Spencer is going to go and do something stupid again and just kind of... He's still the loose cannon to me, and he's going to go out and... I feel like he's going to defy Rick's rule in some way, and that's what's going to get him. And I think that Enid is going to get it from a zombie.
But he's so handsome.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's going to be Tobin who's going to be the one that bites it first from defying Rick's rules. He seems like the one who's going to do that. Even though we saw in the preview how much Spencer is involved, like, he's still not openly defying Rick at this point. You know, I think they need to establish that confrontation again before he goes and does it. Maybe, you know, a few episodes down, Rick finds out whatever he's doing in next week's episode, and the confrontation starts there. I think it's a little premature on that side. Hmm. Enid, I'm totally cool with biting it, though.
As we can tell from this episode.
Yeah.
F her.
What do you got, Ace?
I think Enid will bite it, but I don't think it's going to be next episode. I think that whole Glenn relationship is going to be built up a little bit, where she has a relationship with Maggie and Glenn, kind of like a little sister hanging out with them. I think Glenn's going to establish a relationship with maybe like training her and teaching her the ways, and then she'll bite it. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to kind of make it more heartbreaking that way. I'm with you on Tobin. I think he's the only one who kind of... Did he go out and kill any... I don't think he... Any walkers at all?
Don't remember.
I don't
exactly
think he did. I think he's one of the few who stayed back and didn't do anything.
Yeah, maybe.
So
I'm not sure.
I can't quite remember yet.
Yeah, but to me, I think Rick is going to think offense right away. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to think revenge. Let's get back at whoever, whether it be Negan's crew or wolves or someone. Let's just kill someone. Yeah.
So with regard to the wolves and Negan's crew, the biggest problem is you don't know where any of them are from. So you would have to basically send out scouting parties, and maybe that's what Spencer is going after.
Possibly.
It's just being like, well, these people did attack us. He hears the story from Daryl and Abraham, and that's where he's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find these people. I'm going to redeem myself, rather than you know, going against Rick's rule. So I think the next episode absolutely needs to be a let up. There was so much that happened in this episode. It's going to be a calmer episode.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a development episode. And I think it's going to be, you know what, we are actually on the same side finally. It's not us living under your rule or us feeling like we have to defend you. It's going to be, this is finally a united community. And I think that it ends on some sort of cliffhanger of Negan knocking on the door. That's my prediction.
I think, okay, I agree. It'll be a let up of an episode. We're going to get some more Maggie Glenn screen time. Next episode, I think it'll be a big Maggie Glenn episode. I don't think that anything else is going to happen in the town before something happens on the road. That's my prediction.
Sure.
I don't think that they're going to make the town get like either approached by or attacked by another person or group. They're going to give us maybe one episode, maybe one or maybe two episodes of kind of things calming down and letting us as an audience feel like we're formulating a plan. And then I think there's going to be a party going on a run or there'll be some reason for some people to go outside the walls. Mm-hmm. And I think when they go outside the walls is when it's going to happen, mm-hmm. but they'll encounter some drama. And whatever that piece of drama is, will be the catalyst for the next big story. It'll probably involve Negan's people.
Yeah,
that gets you to Negan.
What Negan's guy said of, you know, you have to show us where you guys are holding up.
Right.
And everything that you have there, we own a piece of it. So it's been established that Negan's people do not know where Alexandria is yet. So there has to be some sort of encounter that leads them back there in the same way that the wolves found the pack that led them back to Alexandria too.
Well, also, like, what we've gotten so far from... Again, like, the comics are accurate to a point as far as being predictive of what's going to happen in the show, but the thing has also happened where now things that have happened in the comics don't happen, or things that happen in the show never happen in the comics. And so Negan in the comics has a very specific role, and there's a path of events that gets you to Negan. But, you know, to a viewer who doesn't know that history at all, literally, like, Negan seems ominous, but that group is the only group we've seen that's any evidence of him existing. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know what they're going to give us, actually, for the show version right. of this. You know what I mean? So we don't know that much. And I think it's especially important to remember that if you're watching the show and you don't know the history, that's the only group. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a pretty sweet group with motorcycles and guns, and you took them out. So, like, how many more people could they really be, you know?
Yeah.
I just want Lucille to exist. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, 100%. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up for us. So thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, you can tweet at us and let us know your thoughts at ABTVTWD. That is the hashtag we use. One last time, you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media if you want to check in on Twitter and Instagram.
The John Carl, Twitter and Instagram. Whiskey and Waffles on YouTube.
And at Squad Leader Ace on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Daryl Kristen on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, as well as Black Hollywood Live.
Not Daryl.
Not Norman Reedus.
We will see you guys next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad to be back.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.